The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I really wrote this book just for me. Like I wrote it. I wasn't thinking about people reading it. I really just wrote it for myself. And it was so nice. It was so nice. I mean, just to be inside this book felt wonderful to me, even though I will also admit that I cried like pretty much every day.
And welcome back to The Writer Files. I am still your humble host, Kelton Reed, wishing you pages, patience, and perseverance per usual. New York Times bestselling author Emma Straub spoke to me about why everything in life is timing, how to write a book for yourself, time travel, and her latest, This Time Tomorrow. Emma's the bestselling author of five novels, including All Adults Here, The Vacationers, Modern Lovers, and Laura Lamont's Life in Pictures, the short story collection Other People We Married, and her books have been published in 20 countries. Her latest, This Time Tomorrow, has been named one of the most anticipated books of 2022 by Vogue, Oprah, eWeekly, Glamour, Good Housekeeping, Marie Claire, Harper's Bazaar, Reader's Digest, Today, Lit Hub, and many others. Described as a moving father-daughter story and a playful twist on the idea of time travel, author Michael Chabon called the book a beautifully made, elegant music box of a novel that sets in motion its clever clockwork of delight and breaks your heart with its bittersweet, lingering song. Emma and her husband also own Books Are Magic, a popular independent bookstore in Brooklyn, New York. In this file, Emma and I discussed why getting an MFA helped her slow down her writing, how she met everyone in publishing at an indie bookshop, the unique perspective of exennials, how to find confidence in pages while being off balance, why she'd drink less old English if she could go back, and a lot more. Stay calm and write on. And don't forget, you can always support this show by heading to writerfiles.fm, where you can also sign up for email updates, get links to merch, and other resources for writers. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click follow to automatically see new interviews in your podcatcher as soon as they're published, and drop us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to help other writers find us. All right, we are back on The Writer Files, and I am honored today to be joined by best-selling author Emma Straub. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this today.
Thank you. Thank you for calling.
You must be pretty excited, the latest coming out, I believe, tomorrow.
This Time Tomorrow.
This Time Tomorrow. All the hoopla surrounding the latest. But I want to talk about This Time Tomorrow, of course. But let's talk about today. And yeah, let's talk a little bit about kind of your superhero origins, because I'm fascinated by kind of, you know, your embrace of the DIY ethos and kind of bootstrapping this writing career, even though you kind of have, you know, written in the shadow of a literary giant. But talk a little bit about how you got here and this fascinating kind of circuitous path to bestseller.
Sure. So yeah, I mean, I think like it is true that I you know, did some bootstrapping and a lot of DIY stuff, but it is simultaneously true that I always had this network of very well-connected, you know, publishing people around me because of my dad. So it's, you know, I don't want to give myself too much credit for for doing things on my own, because I think, you know, even the things that I did do on my own, you know, all of that was possible because of the sort of world that I was in, or maybe not possible, but it was eased by that. So I want to I want to preface everything I say with that self-awareness. So yeah, I always loved to write. It was always the only thing that I really liked to do, and I did it all the time. And as soon as I graduated from college, really, I was like, yep, okay, now I'm a novelist. That here we go. And I started writing novels, and I wrote 4 novels in pretty quick succession. And because of my dad, I knew agents, and so it was easy for me to meet agents and get hooked up with agents. And it was also equally easy for me to start accumulating rejection letters because the books that I was writing were not at all good. And thank God for that, honestly. Like, thank God for that. Because I think I would be in a really different position now if my juvenile drivel had been published. And so then when I was in my mid-20s, I went to an MFA program, which I loved.
Yeah.
And I just started to slow it down, really. You know, I was always so focused on writing novels and publishing novels that I was really rushing through the actual writing of it.
Yeah.
And my MFA program, I will always be grateful to the University of Wisconsin-Madison, because it was just years of just talking about writing and just working on the writing. And that was so, so valuable to me. And then after that, you know, it was, I met someone in a very strange way. I was working, like you do, you know, this is the truth of life and publishing that I really know to be true now, is that everything in life is timing. It's just timing. You know, you have to be prepared for when that timing presents itself. But you can't force the timing. It just happens. And so for me, that was a guy who I knew a little bit because he had a website where he published short stories. He came to me, the first time he talked to me about it was when I was working at the merch booth at a Magnetic Fields concert. That was one of my jobs. Yeah. And he's like, oh, you know, I want to start a small press. Do you have a story collection? And I said, sure. and then I went home and quickly put together a story collection. Yeah. So this small press, published my first book, Other People We Married. And at that point, I was home from my MFA program, and I was working at Book Court, which was my local independent bookstore. And working there, I met everyone in publishing. I mean, I met everybody. I met so many writers. I met so many editors, so many agents, so many publicists. And all of that put together meant that when I had a new novel that I was really proud of, that someone actually bought it, and that changed my whole life.
Amazing. Yeah. And that must've felt pretty good. What was that conversation with your father like?
Which one?
The one where you said, hey, I sold a book.
Oh, well, so, I mean, you know, my dad is really on my side for sure, because when he read the first novel I wrote when I was 22, he left me a voicemail that I wish I still had. And he said, Emma, you are going to sell this book for $300,000. And of course, I sold it for $0. Right. I couldn't pay someone to publish it. But so, yeah, no, he was so proud. He's so proud. And now,
of course,
you know, this book, my new book, has so much to do with him. So,
yeah,
so it's nice. It's nice. Big Pete is getting a lot of love these days.
Very cool. Well, congrats on the latest, of course. This wall of blurbs is pretty cool to see. Very impressive. Your peers coming out of the woodwork, of course, and the reviews, stellar. I thought it was nice of Michael Chabon to say that This Time Tomorrow is a beautifully made, elegant music box of a novel that sets in motion its clever clockwork of delight, then breaks your heart with his bittersweet, lingering song. Very, very poetic.
Yeah,
but I thought it was pretty funny, the title of this piece. I think it's the USA Today time travel book. This Time Tomorrow makes the millennial midlife crisis fun. That's a great title. How did you feel about that piece? That was pretty cool.
I'm on the cusp. I identify as a geriatric millennial.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I was born in 1980, so I'm like really on the line, and it's very funny to me, to see like when I get identified as a millennial, which of course I take as a compliment because it makes me feel younger. And when I get identified as Gen X, which feels like a diss and makes me feel old. So, so I loved it. I loved that piece.
Oh, good. Yeah. You are on the cusp, and I think, because my wife is, there too, they've called that strange little cusp area the Xennial.
Oh yeah, that's me. There we go.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard this term before, but then they don't really identify with like the Gen X or the Millennial. They're just kind of like, screw you guys, you know, we're our own thing.
Yeah.
And I think that very much comes out in your kind of in your own ethos. And of course, I want to talk about the transition to bookstore owner and kind of that Pandora's box as a writer. Yeah, talk a little bit more about kind of the seeds of This Time Tomorrow and how you kind of, you know, embraced a little bit of semi-autobiographical pieces to construct this really interesting time travel, you know, and I know it's not a traditional time travel sci-fi type book, but talk a little bit about kind of where the idea came from and then, you know, how or why you chose this particular modus.
Sure. So in 2020, in the spring of 2020, I had been writing a novel, you know, that was under contract and was going to be great. And I was excited about it. And I'd done a lot of research for it and all that. But then, you know, once I'd been home with my kids for months during the pandemic, during the early part of the pandemic, I couldn't write that book anymore. And I didn't have any childcare anyway, so I couldn't, even if I wanted to. But by the time I had childcare again in the fall, I couldn't go back to that book. And my father was in the hospital, and he and I were having a great time together, you know, in this funny way. Just, I mean, I have two very loud, very rambunctious children. And when, you know, often when I'm with my parents, I'm also with my children, which makes, you know, long sustained conversations impossible. And so when I would go and visit my dad in the hospital, we would be able to talk or just sit there or whatever for hours, which we hadn't been able to do for, you know, 8 years since before I had children, really. And so this book really, really grew out of that. It really grew out of, just really that feeling, that, you know, we all have or will have or have had, which is being faced with, you know, the death of your parents and thinking about like how you got there and what you'd do to stop it and where you'd rather be, you know? I think it's a universal, it's a universal feeling. And so that's what I did. I just dove on back.
Yeah. Nostalgic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So was it hard to finish writing the book? Because it must have been kind of pleasurable to be in that.
Yeah.
In that mindset.
It was. I mean, it was so pleasurable to write this book. And I can say, I don't know if this is a good or bad thing to admit to other people, but I really wrote this book just for me. Like I wrote it. I wasn't thinking about people reading it. I really just wrote it for myself. And it was so nice. It was so nice. I mean, just to be inside this book felt wonderful to me, even though I will also admit that I cried like pretty much every day. But, you know, it was 2020, so we were all crying every day.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it was hard to finish it and to let go of it. But I was also really excited to be able to give it to my dad because he was home and I didn't know that he would be when I started writing it or for most of the writing of it.
Yeah.
And so that felt really meaningful, you know, to be able to say, here, I made you something, you know?
Yeah. I just wanted to read the books are magic. And I believe you wrote this, but Alice Stern, a 40-year-old New Yorker, isn't sure about her life, sad about her dying science fiction writer father, and wakes up on her 16th birthday in 1996. Things that appear on the style sheet of this book. A Tribe Called Quest, Peggy Sue Got Married, Barney Greengrass, Caboodles, the Color Me Bad episode of Beverly Hills 90210.
It's a good episode.
Bonnie Bell, Lip Smackers, I remember those. Gray as Papaya, Jeopardy, Jordan Catalano, JFK Jr., the AMNH, Old English, yum. And Toast of New York Lipstick.
Yep, that's it.
Cheers
that's
to you. If I could crack an Old English and pour some out for you right now, I would. It's a love story about a father and a daughter. It's time travel. It's sad. It's funny. And I wrote it because I had to put everything that I was feeling somewhere. That's pretty amazing. Congratulations on the latest. That's pretty exciting stuff. We'll talk a little bit about that Pandora's box of becoming, you know, not only being a writer mom, but becoming a bookstore owner, somehow surviving a pandemic, and publishing a new novel. I mean, all this stuff seems impossible to mortals, like just on its face, like one at a time, but like you're doing all these things at the same time. You're somehow getting words onto the page and shaping them into beautiful prose that people are reading and loving. Talk about this, you know, how has your process changed?
Oh God. I mean, when I think about my process, as it was in my youth, when I had less on my plate, God, it used to be so dreamy. and now it's all over the place. I mean, it's, you know,
is it getting easier? Is it getting easier?
I mean, there are certain things that are easier. I mean, I think the more books you write, the more confidence you have in your ability to, you know, write a start, middle, and ending of a novel. Like that gets easier for sure. But what doesn't get easier is finding the hours in the day to do all of the things you have to do, you know, whether it's write a novel or, you know, have a day of meetings at the bookstore or make sure that the children get to the dentist or whatever, you know, that is by far the hardest part of my working life is is really being okay with the fact that there is no balance, and that I really have to sort of like zoom out and say like, okay, so like, what do I have to make sure is in place, both in terms of childcare and in terms of staff at the bookstore, to make sure that like when I need to just be at home writing, that I can do that. I also like, I think that a lot of writer friends I have are like, you know, big procrastinators. I am not. Like, I just, if I have 6 hours to write, I'm gonna use those hours. Like, I am up early. I am ready to work as soon as the children walk through the doors at school. Like, I have no time to waste. I mean, I would say that, you know, like if there's something that I need to work on as a person, it's like relaxation time. I don't know about that.
Do you sleep?
I do sleep. Yeah, sleep. Good. I sleep. I do not stay up late. Like, my body is like shut down, you know, robot shutdown mode at like 9 p.m. But yeah, I would say one of my like, you know, best qualities as a like person with multiple jobs is that I really am working all the time. And yeah, you know, the pandemic I has changed that a bit in a way that I think is probably really good for my mental health in the long run. That like, you know, I think I now really understand that it's okay. Like, I can love my jobs and I can work really hard. And I understand that nothing is quite as urgent as I thought it was, you know, and that like things can take time and things can shift and it's okay to not know something right away. You know, I would say that like the last couple of years I really have been, yeah, just like trying to let go of my need to like work at 150%, 100% of the time.
Yeah, managing that energy and stress and adrenaline and all that stuff. Well, are you a coffee or a tea drinker?
I'm a tea drinker. Coffee doesn't agree with me, but I drink tea all day long. And that's probably not better for me, you know, than like someone who drinks like a cappuccino in the morning. But I think in my brain, I'm like, I drink so much less caffeine than people who drink coffee. But that it's a lie. It's a lie.
Yeah, right. How about a favorite cocktail?
I like a Negroni.
Oh, nice.
I like a Negroni.
Gin and Campari.
And a little vermouth.
Lovely.
Yeah.
That made my mouth water. Probably a little too early for that. Before we kind of wrap up with your advice to your fellow scribes on just how to keep going, talk a little bit about this amazing community that you've built there at Books Are Magic. And I know, you know, we kind of always try to like dovetail, like, what's it like to own a bookstore and does it make you a better writer and that kind of stuff. But talk more about like, I mean, you're fostering this fantastic community. You're still like rubbing elbows with all these, with your peers and these amazing writers and probably meeting people that you might not be hanging out with as much.
Oh, for sure.
You know, just talk a little bit about the community and fostering amazing other writers' dreams because you've lived your dreams and you're kind of like a hero to, you know, a superhero to a lot of these people. But
yeah, I mean, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. But it is it is definitely my favorite part. One of my favorite parts of owning the bookstore is getting to have this like sort of special kind of relationship with other writers. Writers who I don't know, you know, debut writers, or I don't, just like writers who I wouldn't necessarily have encountered. And just getting to champion their work and to sell their books and to tell everyone how great they are. That's one of my favorite, parts of the job. And, you know, the thing that I missed the most when we were doing everything on Zoom was not getting to meet writers in person. And now, you know, I'm not there nearly as much for the evening events as I used to be. I used to be at every event we did, which I loved so much. We started our events like a half an hour later than most bookstores do, because I could put my kids to bed and then run over.
That's so cool.
Because I live just a few blocks away. And so, yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing. And I think that, you know, one could work at a bookstore and say, oh, there are so many books. There are more books than I could ever read in my lifetime in this room, you know, like, what's the point of adding more? But I just feel inspired. I feel inspired by all the books, and I read much more widely now than I did before. And I'm surrounded by my brilliant booksellers who read differently than I do. Which is the point, you know, like we all have our different tastes and likes and dislikes and obsessions. And it's great. It has made like my, you know, world of books a much richer, more diverse place.
You're like an independent book sommelier.
Yeah, we all are. We all are. Every bookseller. Every bookseller is.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, I did recently speak with Hernan Diaz, author of Trust, and he said that he loved you. So I just
I love him too. I love him too. And I love Trust. Trust is amazing.
Yeah,
oh, what a book.
Yes, yes. So fun one before we wrap up here. If you could have dinner with any author from any era to your favorite place in the world, who would you take? Where would you take them? All expenses paid, of course. And you may have already had this dinner.
I feel really lucky because I get to do that, you know? But I would say I would take my dad to Grace Papaya. There you go. Oh. Bing, bang, boom.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, that is quite apropos for this time tomorrow. Of course, I will link to the book. I will link to your home base there, which is emmastraub.net. Mm-hmm. I'll link to Books Are Magic, of course. And you're on all the socials, so they can, listeners can connect with you at your home base there. Congrats. Congrats on the latest. I thought, a whimsical twist on time travel. This Time Tomorrow asks the age-old and irresistible question, if you could revisit your teenage self, what would you do differently or try doing over again? I definitely would drink less old English, personally.
Same.
Yeah.
Same.
All right, perfect. Quickly, I know you got to run, but just a pearl of wisdom on how to keep going, how to persevere for aspiring or established authors.
I would say my best advice is just to finish whatever it is that you're working on, because you can try to make something perfect forever, but you can't do anything with like a perfect half thing. So I would say finish it. And then worry about making it good.
I like it. Finish it cubed, and then lean on the craft. Very cool. Any other shout outs you want to give? I know you got to pop off of here, but we really appreciate your time, your wisdom. We hope you come back again in the future.
Yeah. No, thanks. Thanks for having me.
It was truly a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us for this file. And if you're a fan of the show, simply head over to writerfiles.fm for more. That's writerfiles.fm.